Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Ja, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.
Unsere Krankenhäuser sind immer für uns da. Tag und Nacht. In ganz Deutschland. Sie möchten mehr zur neuen Krankenhausreform wissen? Dann sind Sie hier richtig. Krankenhaus-mit-zukunft.de. Eine Information des Bundesministeriums für Gesundheit.
The snowstorm was one of epic proportions. It closed the schools for 3 weeks, right up until Christmas break, and that was when the disappearances started. "Better not stay out too late, or Soap Sally will get you," my mum called to me as I went out the door to play with Rob and Terrell. I rolled my eyes at her, slipping my mittens on as I grabbed my sled from beside the door. "Sure, Mum, I'll be sure to watch out for Soap Sally." That had always been Mum's little attempt to scare me as a kid. When I was younger, like 4 or 5, Mum would use it to make sure I was inside before the streetlights came on. I remember the first time she ever said it to me, the moment ingrained in my brain forever. I was heading out to play in the sandbox in my front yard, something Dad had spent all day building on his day off, and she had offhandedly told me to make sure I was in before dark, because Soap Sally would take me away. I had stopped, little pail and shovel in hand, and asked her who Soap Sally was. My mother just shrugged and said it was something her mother had always said, and the two of us had used it as a kind of personal joke from then on. "Better get the groceries in before dark," I would say to my mum. "Soap Sally might get us." "Better hurry up and take out the trash," Mum would say. "I think I hear Soap Sally prowling." We'd done it so long, it had become normal. But I wasn't a baby anymore. I was 12, and I knew that Soap Sally was just some boogeyman that adults used to scare kids. She was no more real than the Wampus Cat, another one of Mum's colourful stories, and I put it out of my mind as I ran to join the others. Terrell had told us that his brother had told him about a big hill near Basker's Pond. "It's so steep that when you come down it, you almost fly," he said. So I trudged through the fresh powder, over the streets that no longer looked like streets at all, and made my way towards the edge of town. My hometown isn't very big. One of those 2 stoplights and a gas station kind of places you always drive through on your way to somewhere else. There were maybe 20 kids my age in town, and our whole school was probably less than your graduating class. We knew we were living in a podunk town in Georgia Hills, and most of us dreamed of getting out after high school and doing anything but staying here. For some of us, that dream was actually realized. For others, the cemetery was all they had to look forward to. I met Terrell near Basker's Park, a small little picnic and play area that butted up against Basker's Pond. The pond wasn't huge, but it was a great place to swim and fish in the summertime and just enjoy yourself. Today, however, it was a winter wonderland of fresh snow and chilly winds. Terrell was bundled up to his eyebrows in a thick ski jacket, and his snow pants had little rolls in them that made him look a little like the Michelin Man. He too was clutching a battered old sled, and when he spoke, I could see the air puff from his mouth. "About time. Where's Rob?" That was when we heard a loud call from up the road, and Rob came running with a banana yellow disc under his arm. He was wearing a matching ski suit and a pair of thick snow boots that seemed to be the only thing he wore that wasn't yellow. His voice cut through the sound of the wind like a foghorn, and I wondered if we were the only people in the whole town not inside right now. It was a little bit spooky, even in the middle of the day. "Took you long enough," Terrell said. "Are we ready to sled?" "If this hill is half as cool as you say it is, T, then I'm ready to sled till midnight," Rob said excitedly. With that, we set off. We had all seen the hill in question, Overlook Crest was the place to spread your blanket on the 4th of July to watch the fireworks, or to have a picnic, or to sit and watch the boats that went fishing out there during the warm months. It offered a great view of the water, and as we trudged up it, the hill felt about twice as steep as usual. The snow made it slippery, and the three of us were laughing and pushing as we raced to the top. Terrell won, of course. Terrell was a beefy kid, and he was harder to push down than Rob, who was mostly skin and bones. He set his sled against the snow, and when he slid down, he really did seem to fly. We spent the day in the hill, sledding, snowball fighting, making snowmen, and generally enjoying the day. Blizzards like these were rare, and we'd been having a lot of days like this, where we were free to just be kids and enjoy our childhood. Sometimes we linked up with other kids from school to have snowball fights or play games, but mostly it was just Terrell and Rob and me enjoying the childhood we had before it was over. We had all expected it to end when we went to high school, the dying place of childish things, but none of us could have guessed that it might be something childish that ended it. I didn't notice it was getting dark until the streetlights came on and sent a dazzle of diamonds up from the snow. "Oh, crap," I said. "Mom's going to be mad if I'm late." "Oh, relax," Rob said. "It's not like we have school tomorrow. As long as you're home before bedtime, why would she care?" Rob's parents were never home, leaving him in his aunt's or grandmother's care since they worked late. Terrell and I, however, had mothers and fathers who would expect us home when the streetlights came on, and I could see Terrell shuffling nervously too. We were all poised at the top of the hill, prepared to race to the bottom. And when Rob saw our looks, he rolled his eyes and jumped. We all jumped then, putting on a burst of speed as we tried to catch him. As we came down, I began to hear a strange sound. The rumble of something rolling down the street, the jingle of an almost merry bell, and the hum of a gravelly voice. I looked around, trying to find the source of the noise. And that's when I saw her walk under a streetlight. It was an old woman pushing a wheelbarrow or a small cart. We were heading right for her, and Rob was turned around backward so he could laugh and mug at us. "Rob," I shouted, "look out." He turned just in time to smack face first into the cart. We swerved to a stop, Terrell and I running down the hill the rest of the way. We could already see the old lady bending over him to inspect the prone boy, and under the glare of the streetlight, he looked pretty bad. There was this big gash on his forehead, and blood was leaving red streaks down his yellow ski suit. Rob was groaning when we approached, and the woman looked up at us, smiling feebly as she rose to her full height. She was as wide as she was tall, and she was nearly 6 feet tall. She wore a voluminous black dress, her hair caught in a scarf or a kerchief that trapped it to her head. Her hands were liver-spotted, her fingers long and spidery as they sank back into her sleeves. The cart she was pushing seemed to be empty, and I figured she was on her way to pick something up when we bumped into her. There was a bell attached to it, and as Rob flopped back against it again, it tinkled merrily. "Deary me," she said, and her voice was thin and spidery. "I didn't see you there, son. Are you okay?" We helped Rob to his feet, but he was very shaky and hardly able to stand. I was worried that maybe he had a concussion, maybe even a broken skull, and I wanted to help him get home as quickly as I could. Terrell asked the woman if we could borrow a cart, but she said she needed it later and couldn't loan it to us. "But," she said, "I will help you back to my cottage so you could call for help. I'll make you something warm to drink while you call your parents and let them know what happened. Put him in the cart now, and you can help me push him to my house." I was hesitant. Mom was always clear and not taking rides from strangers, and certainly not going into their houses. But Rob groaned and wobbled then, which made up my mind. Our town was so small after all. We'd never seen this old lady before, but what were the chances that she would want to hurt us? No one ever wanted to hurt us, and despite all the lessons about stranger danger, we'd never even heard of anyone getting kidnapped. We loaded Rob into the wagon. The bell jingled as he slid in and pushed it back the way she had come. As it turned out, the woman lived in the woods behind Baskers Park. The tires rumbled over the wood chips that led to her house, and Rob groaned as he was jostled in the cart. We had left our sleds behind, and we moved unburdened towards a dark little cabin at the end of the long road. It looked spooky in the night, not a candle or a light to be seen inside. "You can push him right in the front door," she growled out, and as we neared, something screamed at me not to go inside that house. Common sense seemed to have reasserted itself, and when I paused on the steps to the front porch, the old woman and Terrell barely noticed. As the door came open, I could smell something like wax melting, the warm aromatic smell of tallow. There were floral smells as well, and something akin to the cooking of bacon fat. There was another smell though, something that prickled the hairs on the back of my neck. A coppery smell, a wet smell, and when I took a step back, the old woman seemed to notice that I hadn't come inside. She turned in the doorway, and we made eye contact for a few seconds before she asked me why I wasn't coming in. "I just remembered that I thought of something, anything, and landed on a flimsy lie. My dad was coming to pick us up. If he comes to the park and we're gone, then he'll worry, so I probably need to..." I turned to go back down the cedar path, but suddenly her hand was around my wrist. I felt my breath catch as I looked down at those long, spindly fingers. The bones creaked beneath the skin, and the flesh around them was so thin that I imagined I could see those bones through the pale wrapper that surrounded them. As firm as her grip was, her skin was waxy and slick. It reminded me of nothing so much as candle wax, heated tallow, and when I looked into her face, I could see nothing human there. Her face looked like an exceptionally well-crafted mask. A mask made of human skin. "Come inside," she whispered, and I could see that her mask bore too much makeup. She had really caked it on, and it made her look almost clownish. Whoever had applied it had applied it roughly. Her eyes were like black pits beneath all that dark shadow. I whispered, my dry tongue battering at chapped lips. "I just need to tell my dad where I..." "Your father can't help you now," she breathed, grinning with a mouth full of gravestone teeth. "But don't worry, you'll see him soon." She yanked my arm then, and I saw my one chance to escape. I pulled back hard and nearly toppled her from the porch, my arm slipping from a greasy grip. I was running flat out as she cawed angrily behind me. I didn't stop running until I reached my house. My mom was waiting for me on the porch, looking angry as I came running up. She asked what I thought I was doing out so late. She asked if I meant to meet the soap Sally that she always joked about. She asked me if I intended to freeze to death in the snow. All those questions went unanswered. All her anger disappeared as I wrapped my arms around her and told her that some old woman had taken Terrell and Rob. She called the police, but seemed angry when she hung up. She told me that they must have thought she was someone pulling a prank. They told her that they would get right on it, and that next time Soap Sally came after her to make sure there was less than a foot of snow on the ground. She sent me to bed, but my dreams were full of the old woman and her deep, pitiless eyes. In my dreams, she got me. In my dreams, she cackled and peeled my skin off. I woke up the next day to hear Mom on the phone with Terrell's mom. "He came home in a state last night. Said some lady had Terrell, just like I told you last night. Didn't you find anything? I'll ask him once he gets up. If he comes home, let me know, please." She hung up the phone and came to talk to me. The police came by later that day to question me. I guess they were taking the disappearance of two children a little more seriously now. I told them exactly what I had told my mom. Rob had hit his head, and the old lady had offered to help us. We put him in a cart and pushed him to her house. I got spooked and tried to run, but she grabbed me. I got free and ran for the house. I told my mom what had happened, but the police hadn't believed her. It seemed they were interested in this house now and asked me to take them to it. I gave them directions, but refused to go anywhere near it. They came back and told me that the house had been abandoned for years and asked if I was sure. I told them I was, and they said all they had found was a little bit of dried blood and a black dress that might fit a horse. They didn't believe me. That much was apparent. But they believed me after the soap arrived. I woke up one morning about a week after Robin Terrell's disappearance and walked downstairs to the smell of breakfast. Mom was making flapjacks and bacon, and the smell turned my stomach a little as the familiar odour assaulted my nose. To this day, the smell of hot fat makes me want to puke, and the smell of it always takes me back to that house and that day. "Sweetie, could you bring the milk in from the front porch?" I looked outside. "The snow's 3 feet deep, Mom. I doubt the milkman ran today." "Well, I heard someone on the porch a few minutes ago. They left something and didn't knock. See if it's the milk before it freezes, please." Sitting on the mat was a small wicker basket. Sitting on a bed of black cloth were squares of packages wrapped in wax paper. I felt my breath hitch as I saw the cloth, but tried to shake it off. What didn't remind me of the old woman in the woods these days? I reached down to pick up the package and felt the semi-solid brick of soap as it smushed a little in my fingers. I unwrapped it, not sure who would leave soap on our doorstep. And that's when I saw the note. It was under the soap, written with a long, spidery hand, and the words sent a shudder through me that the winter chill couldn't top. "See you soon." I felt the soap slip from my numb fingers. When it hit the board, I looked down and saw something that pushed a scream up my throat. It was a bone. A finger bone. The police told my dad that it had been Rob's finger bone, but they found trace evidence of Terrell's bones in the other bar of soap. Both their parents had received similar baskets of soap and, unfortunately, Rob's grandmother had brought it from her bathroom when the police came to check. She had been washing her hands with it all day, having no clue that she was washing her hands with her grandson's body. My own grandmother came to visit a few days later. She and Mom had a long talk about something, and I got the feeling Mom didn't want her to tell me something. As she shuffled to my room, I couldn't help but shudder as I imagined my door opening to reveal a huge woman in a black dress and shawl, leering at me as she smiled a witch's grin. When my grandmother knocked, I told her to come in. She sat on the bed with me and seemed to think about what she meant to say. "I grew up in this town too. You know that. One day, my friend Grace and I were late coming home from a church dance. We cut through the park, and as we passed by the sign that read, 'Welcome to Baskers Park,' we saw an old woman who was trying to fix a cart. She asked us to help her get a cart to her house, and we obliged. No sooner had I seen her house, though, than I got a tickling feeling. My mother had told me about a soap sally too, and I suddenly realized what the smell was around her cart. It was tallow and lye and blood. 'You got real lucky, kiddo,' she said, giving me a huge hug as her bones creaked in just that way soap sallies had. 'Don't press that luck by being careless.' She left then, and we never spoke about it again. That was 5 years ago. 5 long winters ago. The snow is back, and the days are short. But I haven't left my home after dark since that night I lost my best friends. Though I never saw her again, I knew she had seen me. Sometimes I hear the grumble of that cart, the tinkle of bells, and it sends me running home as surely as I did that night I escaped her. My greatest fear is that she will make good on her threat one day. One day, Soup Sally may leave me on my parents' porch, their missing son unknowingly come home.
We always recommend Shopify. It took us from an idea to a real business. We got set up, I think, in less than a day. With very little effort, we could just focus on the supply chains and the product development. Shopify gives us the ability to customize without the complexity. We can change something without introducing fragility or having to pay a developer. We're Thirsty Turtle, and we leveled up our business with Shopify.
Start your free trial at shopify.com/au.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach integrier- und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.